Guys, welcome to my channel, Journey and Beyond Untold Stories. Let me introduce you to someone truly impressive. In high school, he founded Nobo as a passion project after realizing the harmful effects of single-use plastics. Nobo gained widespread attention after an appearance on Shark Tank, where he secured a deal with Mark Cuban. His company worked on consumer goods and hotel partners to transform product lines into product solutions that dissolve and leave no waste. Nobo now holds 4 issued IPs, and Ben is now a founder of Tenkara AI, which is about building frictionless supply chains through AI. Hi, Ben. Welcome to my channel, Journey and Beyond. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. How are you, Shivali?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for making our time. So tell us all about your new venture, Tenkara AI.
Sure. To provide some context, I founded a company called Nobo and worked on it for 10 years. The thesis of Nobo was to eradicate single-use plastic waste by encapsulating shampoos and conditioners in water-soluble films like a Tide Pod. To get that venture off the ground, it took a lot of time and a lot of effort. Early on, the company was on Shark Tank, did a deal with Mark Cuban in the U.S., and then we went on to close $11 million. Close 7-figure sales contracts. And I think the hardest thing of all was opening up 2 manufacturing facilities to keep the lights on in that early on company. I was contract manufacturing, and I quickly learned how big of a mess it is to how hard it truly is to bring an idea, a product from a 0 to 1 phase. I saw so many founders spend so much time and money, like going down these rabbit holes of breaking their brains, trying to figure out how to connect all the dots and pieces to get a product off the ground. In August, I had that realization that, like, using the tools of today, you can really eat away and automate a lot of the processes that were so cumbersome that came with such a high learning curve to bring an idea, a product from that 0 to 1 phase. And Tenkara was born. What we basically do is we allow founders and enterprises to prompt ideas or submit this bill of materials, basically the components that make up a single product. And we'll go out there, we'll speak to a bunch of suppliers, we'll find faster, cheaper, better ways of making products and own really that back-end function of a business so these companies can rededicate their efforts to things that help them grow over things that keep them alive.
Tell us about your new company, Tenkara AI. I have read a little bit about it. I know it's AI-based company in supply chains, which is a hot topic right now. So can you share your vision for, like, you know, how AI can make supply chain frictionless? And what are the biggest challenges you're facing right now in this space?
Yeah. Good operators are few and far between, yet they're needed in every single physical product business to order, to procure, to handle accounting, to like get products from certain vendors and build redundancies. It used to take one operator can only manage a handful of products maximum, just dealing with so many vendors, so many moving pieces. What I'm building with Tenkara is a digital platform where it can really change the role of an operator so they can focus on growth and distribution focused roles while we handle like the sourcing, the procurement, the product curation, the product development phase of a business. How LLMs and AI play a key role here is we bring on operators and, you know, right now they started off only being able to manage 3 products a week. Now they're at a pace where they can handle 5 products a week. Hopefully, you know, that number increases to 100 or 1,000 by automating these back-end tasks, creating LLMs that basically speak to ERP or inventory management systems and speak to manufacturers and basically ensure quality, ensure standardization. So when we get a bunch of quotes from manufacturers, we know that they're one-to-one, and then we can pick and choose the right data, or that we can pick and choose the right price points and the right lead times for a brand and allow them to go through this full supply chain process turnkey without picking up the phone and talking to a supplier. What my big term vision is, my long-term vision is to build like an Amazon of operations for physical products where you can prompt a product and then on the flip side, just quickly order it and procure it once it goes through a build phase.
And I can proudly say that I know the founder very well. When you're as big as Amazon. During your founder's journey, what has been the most surprising or unexpected lesson you have learned?
The most surprising lesson I've learned while building a company is I often found that making decisions is incredibly important, and it's so easy to get stuck in a state of indecision. It's like a habitual state of indecision, and as a founder, indecision is the worst decision. So like, I think I've learned to be a lot more decisive in my thoughts and my actions and my mannerisms, and avoid being scared to make a mistake. Because like, when you're an entrepreneur and you're building a bunch of products, you basically, time is against you. You typically don't have time, you don't have money, you're running out the clock. And the only way to succeed is to take crazy, stupid risks. Like, we've burned through cash repeatedly to just get the company off the ground. I think when I met you in Australia, like, that was life and death money for us at the time at Novo that helped us make payroll. So like, doing risks is extremely important. Like, making mistakes is a necessary cost of taking risks, and the worst thing you can do is not do anything at all.
Nice one. From starting Novo to your new venture, what is the biggest difference in your approach to building companies now compared to when you were just starting out your first company?
Yeah. I think now that I'm building a second company, I think I am building it for more principled first principles. What I mean by that is, it's very easy to get caught in the fantasy of like venture capital and like building businesses and growing at 3x every single year and look sustainable. And maybe if you get your first round of financing, you think it's never ending. It isn't. I think I kind of got caught up in the lore of like trying to grow super fast and like bring on a ton of people and take on a ton of capital expenditures at Novo, where I was building the elements of growth without actually expanding our revenues and you know, profit and such. And it wasn't that sustainable for my last venture. And this one, I think I'm being a lot more mindful to get the company running and earning revenues and like growing like from day one and keeping things a lot more nimble than I kept them at Novo, and taking on a lot less and doing a few things really excellently. Like, I'm taking all these lessons I think I learned from Novo and trying to apply them as best as I can to Tinkara.
Nice. I'm sure it's going to be so much better than being a first-time founder. Okay, I'm really curious about your journey with Shark Tank and landing a deal with Mark Cuban. I've watched that video so many times. What was it like working with him, and how did his involvement impacted your business?
Yeah, I mean, getting on Shark Tank changed my life. Like, I had an idea at the time, and I didn't know how to apply it to make any progress. Like, it was just a thought in my head, a blip in the radar, and thought it was so cool, but I was running in circles, like emailing a million people for help without a clear, crisp, concise ask. I was building, but the process of building before Shark Tank was just running in circles, not knowing what to do. And Shark Tank gave me something which helped me more than anything, and that was a very clear mission. I wasn't going to get on the show unless I showed them product. So I knew this was the one executable thing I needed to accomplish. Reached out to a bunch of chemists, was able to create a simple product. I had no idea what I was pitching. Shark Tank, obviously, you have to have a clear, crisp, concise, you know, 2-minute elevator pitch. Helped me develop that. I had to create a product that people would see and touch and feel. And it wasn't great. It was an early on product. But like, came up with some form of that. And then I had to get people excited with this vision. So it really was instrumental in helping me begin this entrepreneurial journey when I was a kid. As far as working with Mark Cuban goes, it was chill. You know, it was like a lot of involvement early on, a lot less later on. Like he has a lot of companies. So he was helpful in parts of the business's growth.
So you have been building companies since you were a teenager. What's one piece of advice you wish someone had given you early on that, you know, you think aspiring founders need to hear?
I mean, I think founders oftentimes get far too in their heads, strategizing, thinking through ways the businesses won't work. Like, I think one piece of advice that's very helpful is, like, when you're starting out, the ideas don't really matter. It's like, what problem matters that you're looking to solve? What problem space have you identified, like, that you feel is overlooked? Like, ideas can take many different shapes and forms. And when you build an idea out, it's almost like where you're trying to boil the ocean and you have to choose the right spot to do it. Like, do it where there's a lot of fish so you can, you know, stay full for decades, or do it where there's nothing and you're stranded. So I feel like the idea matters less than understanding what problem you're looking to solve and testing out a bunch of different ways in solving it.
Yeah, good one. Working with investors, especially high-profile ones like Mark Cuban, can shape the trajectory of your company. How do you navigate the balance between maintaining your vision as a founder and aligning with investors' expectations?
I think when it comes to investors' expectations, their expectations stem from the entrepreneur. Like, you're giving them the expectation. So I think everyone underwrites any expectation from an early stage startup because it's so unpredictable. Like, one minor thing can change the course entirely. I would say, like, the best way, if you're dealing with institutional, like, good investors, they understand this. They understand that most companies will fail. Most companies are trying to achieve something outlandish. They're trying to be outliers. They're going to do crazy stuff to accomplish crazy outcomes. And I think what I found that works really well with communicating with investors, at least right now, is maintaining your sense of agency. Your job is not to be agreeable to an investor. It's to do what you believe is the best thing for the business at any given time. And I think investors tend to appreciate that authenticity. Like, it's very important that you make investors feel heard. But also, it's very important that you build the business for yourself. Because if you're just kowtowing to everyone else's, like, needs and wants and desires, you kind of lose the fun of building a business.
You have raised fund from variety of settings, right? From Shark Tank to traditional investors. How do you prepare for such high stakes conversations? And what do you think investors really look in a founder?
I think you have to wear in the nerves a little, like, take your worst, like, your lowest hanging investor calls first. I made that mistake all too many times where I reach out to the people like that I'm most excited by just because I want to talk to them, even though I haven't really gotten better and better and better at pitching myself in the company. So it's always best, like, to target the less important leads first. So you wear in that phase where you get better and better at pitching. I think, like, being truly, like, ultimately the best conversations I've had with investors are just conversations I've never, like, I mean, I have, of course, but the best conversations, I don't run through a pitch deck. I don't, like, pitch myself and talk about, like, the problem side and the solution side. I just, like, make jokes and then we become friends. And then they want to work with me and I want to work with them because we believe in one another. I think that's the right dynamic to treat an investor. Like, you're wanting someone to believe in you because they're in the business of giving out money and making bets. And I found the most amount of success just being, like, I guess, friendly.
Nice.
And, like, really believing in what I'm trying to make work.
Yeah, nice. So this is a question for me, actually. As a founder, you're always taking decisions, right? Morning to evening. Some of them are bad decisions. Some of them are good ones. if you take bad decisions, how do you cope with the guilt?
I mean, bad decisions made for the right reasons are still good decisions, I find. So I don't think that there's like guilt to cope with for me personally. Like, there's a lot of hard decisions, but that doesn't mean they're bad decisions. Laying off people is hard. Doesn't mean it's a bad thing. Firing people is hard. Doesn't mean it's a bad thing. I think guilt is not productive or conducive to growing a company. I think people that join you, whether that be investors, employees, customers, at an early stage, they know you're early. They know the risks they're taking. Like, it's okay to it's amazing to succeed. It's okay to fail. In America, like the country is so, I'm sure in Australia too, but especially in America, the country is so forgiving of failures. Like, I'm creating a second business. I've received so much support from friends, family, investors, etc. Like, it's just like, all right, what are you building next? You learned so much. Like, how can you apply those lessons? So I don't necessarily feel guilt. And I don't think my old partners, my old company, my old employees want me to feel any guilt. I think I think I made hopefully most, if not all, my decisions for the right reasons. So
as a founder, how do you decide when to take advice from investors or mentors and when to trust your own intuitions, especially in the critical moments for the company?
I think you always, if you take someone's money, you have an obligation to hear them out. You don't have an obligation to listen. I mean, generally, I think you as a founder are in the driver's seat, or as a CEO founder, like, you have this role. You have this capacity to do whatever you want to do. Like, you can buy a company, you can turn the ship sideways, you can launch a new product, you can take another product. You are CEO. I think as long as you make decisions, you maintain that agency, you're respectful where you hear people out, but do what you believe is right, then it's you're doing right as a founder, CEO.
Nice. In your experience, what has been the most effective way to build long-term trust with your investors? And how has that trust benefited your companies?
I mean, I think I've heard from some of my investors that it's hard. Like, I've had challenges with this component because, like, naturally I'm very optimistic. So, like, sometimes that can be betrayed as, like, I see things through rosy-colored glasses. I've been told that before. And the intention is not to diminish trust. It's just to one thing I'm, I guess, getting a little bit more mindful of is having one foot in today, one foot in tomorrow, meaning like I can be optimistic about tomorrow, but I have to be practical and communicate the where we're at better about today with investors. So I think that's probably an effective strategy towards like improving and building on a stronger relationship of trust.
Nice. For those who feel that building a successful company is an overwhelming or unattainable goal, what advice would you give to help them push through their fears, insecurities, and take that first step? Because that's the hardest.
I mean, I think I would generally say they're right, where it is hard and it's very rarely, not unattainable, but very rarely attainable. But there are outcomes where it does happen and it's worth a shot. Like, it's like we only live for what, 60, 70, 80, maybe 100 years if we're lucky. There's nothing more fun in this world. It's like a roller coaster. Sign a client, you lose a client, like sign an investor, you see like steady growth. And then a year later, you look at yourself and you're like, damn, I was literally on my computer on my notes tab, like brainstorming ideas. And now five people work for me, supporting families, doing this and that. Like, we have three products, like customers live and die by us. It's like very fulfilling. So whether you succeed or whether you don't, like, the whole process is very, very fulfilling, more so than I found doing anything else. So I think the journey alone makes it worth it.
The good thing is that there are a lot of investors who know you, but AI space is, again, a new space if you compare from the sustainability field. So the investors are going to be pretty new as well, right? So it's a new field to tap into, and how you are navigating those challenges, how you're approaching to the investors in the AI space. Is it attending conference or some other approach you're taking?
Yeah. One thing I've learned, it's a little insider hack, is spending a lot of time in San Francisco is super helpful. There is pot, like I live in Florida where there's nothing really going on. The investors that do invest are usually doing so at much worse valuations. They have a much more tedious process. Here, things run on handshakes and at the speed of light. Like if you meet with one founder, you go to a few, they have meetups every single night on AI summits on every, honestly, on every category from sustainability to AI to med tech to health tech, whatever. And you just become friends with some people and they introduce you to other people. And then sometimes with some investors, it will just click and then other ones will just introduce you to other people. Like the pace of meetings, the pace of building is much quicker here. So I've only been here for like a couple weeks at a time here and there, but I do think it is like an insider hack being in San Francisco. The second thing I would say is, yeah, the category in which you build matters a lot for fundraising. Like it determines how easy you get it or not. Any company can, you know, technically get fundraising, but the milestones for growth, like the caliber for closing a $5 or $10 million seed round at an AI company could be an idea and like a few interested like pilot clients. The category, like what you have to accomplish to do that in sustainability, you have to have like a bunch of multi-million dollar contracts, and you probably have to have a means of a supply chain. Like you have to de-risk so much more, which makes it infinitely more harder. I think I'm building something, honestly, a lot easier than what I did previously. No shame there. But like, and I admire people that go for it, like build and try and unlock these truly material deep tech innovations. But at the same time, like there are easier pathways to like succeed right now. And I feel that's why I'm leaning more into like the software this time around. I mean, we went on Eventbrite or something like that, attended a cocktail hour, my girlfriend and I, the other day, and a million investors in this like penthouse in San Francisco, socializing, people just like have random conversations, lots of cool people, lots of cool stories, lots of cool founders. And it's all done very casually here, like not like stuffy meetings. So that's what I like as well.
So stay by staying in San Fran, did you mean like go to a lot of events and, you know, you get a chance to connect with investors?
Yeah. For one, I think what I mean by that is, look, I would say there's, depending on where you are in the world, the relationship between an investor and an entrepreneur can vary. And usually only the top 0.1% have a relationship with their founder, is wanted by the investor. In a lot of places in the world, like that's the dynamic. I think the story is kind of flipped here, where there's a lot of high caliber founders that are proving or disproving their ideas at a very rapid pace. And investors, they're not being pitched formally here. It's more like you make a lot of friends that are entrepreneurs. You attend poker games with VCs and entrepreneurs, and they are not like conferences. They're not like applying to accelerators. I mean, they have that, but the deals typically get done where you just like make friends with entrepreneurs who have had backing from some investors or another, and then they just introduce you to investors and clients, and then this process goes really, really quickly. And then you just find yourself meeting every day for 30 minutes with a different client or customer or investor. And this process goes beyond just investing. Like when you're ready to sell your company, it's a similar process. If you're selling a tech company, like San Francisco's the place to be as well, I feel like. A lot of these investors are also on the boards of like, or know the board chairmen of public companies, could buy your company. there's a lot of insider deals like that happen. So it's really helpful to be here.
I'm going to ask you a question and you have to immediately give a response.
I'm ready.
First question is, who is a founder or business leader you look up to and why?
I mean, top of mind, I love Elon Musk. I think he's really cool. Like the stuff he builds is just super inspiring. It's a very basic answer, but I love him.
Yeah, same. What's the best book you have read recently and why did it resonate with you?
I liked this book, The Five Pillars of Leadership. It was more of a business book, and I don't really read business books all that often, but I like how it told a fable of running a company and working through challenges and teammates, like internal challenges to make a team work conducively over independently, where you have a bunch of high caliber people and they can sometimes work really horribly. And if they all are aligned on a common mission, they can work really well. So I liked it.
Nice. What's the best piece of advice you have ever received in your life?
I would say it's kind of what I conveyed earlier. Indecision is the worst decision.
Nice. What's your go-to productivity hack?
Superhuman, the email. I love it so much. I live and die off of that. I used to have a million different emails that piled up, and Superhuman, I just clear my inbox. It is refreshing to my brain.
Nice. I'll look into it. What has been the bestest moment in your startup journey?
The best moment of my startup journey? Probably Shark Tank. I was happy. So happy. Adrenaline was shot there. Yeah.